Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and we're deep into basketball season, and we feel a little bit less good than we did last week. Last week, we were like, wow, look, 2-0 on the road, went through Texas, beat up on UTEP by 1 point, beat up on UTSA by 1 point, and we're like, all right, we're at home, we're feeling good against Charlotte, feeling good against Old Dominion, ODU. And, you know, this week we're like, wow, we lost two heartbreakers at home, you know, 2-2 in a conference, which I feel like is right about where we deserve to be. You know, the radio guys are like, wow, like North Texas plays such a fun brand of basketball, going down in 1 point games. Well, I think that's indicative of the kind of team we are. We're not good enough to close games out and you know, extend like a 1-2 point lead to a 6 point lead. And, you know, we're not bad enough to be down 6 points and then, you know, let that be a 12-point lead. We come back. It makes it a close game. And with me to talk about it, like last week, is Mr. Greg Godecker. How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing about as well as somebody could be doing.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear, man. So tell me about your feelings about last week. How do you feel?
Well, Dr. Phil, you know... We went into last week and we said that, you know, I said I wouldn't be surprised if we won both games or if we lost both games or if we split both games. And it's always tough to lose, you know, close games, no matter whether it's on the road or at home. I think the close game losses hurt a little bit more since we were already 2-0 and both those games were there for the taking if we just capitalized in a few more areas, you know, making free throws, offensive rebounds. It seemed like we gave up a little bit too much in both the games. So I'm not down on where we're at because, like I said, if you would have told us before the season that we'd be 2-2 after four games in conference play looking at our opponents, I would have taken it. I think most people would have taken it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's the thing. It's like it's hard to get angry about it. It's hard to be upset. I'm not really upset. I think in the moment, you're like, oh, you got to block out against Charlotte and allowing Milos, was it Supica, to run free and grab a rebound and put it back in. You're not happy about that, obviously. And in the Old Dominion game, I mean, similar. It's like, execution down the stretch, right? You know, I thought they played well against them. It was hard to guard what's that, Trey Porter. He's a big dude, he's really good. Sure. And we didn't really match up well against them, so you gotta execute down the stretch. You can't get called for traveling, but also, you know, I mean, if you're like, well, if we do better there, well, so does Old Dominion, right? And they don't get called for traveling on the possession before that. And, I mean, it's little things like that. You can make your free throws. There's things to do to improve your team, to make sure that you don't lose close games like this. And, you know, this team is on the way to doing that. Like, you know, as much progress as we'd like to see in half of season, you know, it doesn't come that quickly. But we can see the indications of it.
The Old Dominion game was a little bit easier to stomach because that's a top 100 team. That was, no matter how good you're playing, it was going to be tough to come back from the hole that we dug. Even if it's 4, 5, 6 points, Old Dominion is, I mean, they're grinded out. You know, they play good defense. They make you execute to win games, and you got to execute at a high level. And we didn't have that. And so, you know, I sent out that tweet towards the end of the game that, if we were going to have any chance to make a comeback, it was going to be because Duffy and Smart hit multiple threes. Well, hey, I mean, hey. Duffy hit, you know, he hit multiple threes, and we got a three from Woolridge, I think, down the stretch too. So,
yeah,
you know, those games, that's tough. That's, you know, that one of the best teams in the league. The Charlotte game, that was a game where we shouldn't have been in the position we were in. I mean, we should have executed better. They weren't a good team. I mean, you know, they go on the road and they lost to Rice last week as well. And, you know, they had a large number of turnovers in their game against Rice. But you look at the stat sheet against us, they only turned the ball over 10 times.
Yeah. They lost to, by the way, that score was 73-64, in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah, and they had, in the Rice game, they had 17 offensive rebounds. For the love of me, I don't know how you lose a game if you have 17 offensive rebounds.
I guess you get a rebound and turn the ball over. I guess that's what they're doing or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they had all the turnovers, but against us, didn't turn the ball over. So,
I mean, yeah, and, you know, we say this a lot in during football season, that, like, this league is not it's not so great, and I think that applies to this level. I think there's some clear favorites, some clearly talented teams. You know, Middle Tennessee, Old Dominion, Western Kentucky are obviously 3-0, right? Western Kentucky had the best outing. They went to Marshall, to Huntington, and absolutely destroyed them. That was ridiculous, 112-87. And then on top of that, they got a 4-star guy in there. So, like, not only are we really good, but we're going to add more talent here. Obviously North Texas is not on that level yet. But against all these other teams, we're probably somewhere in there in the middle. And we'd like to have stolen one against Old Dominion. So you feel good about that. You know, you give them a scare, give them a run. But, you know, Middle Tennessee got scared, you know, last week. And you know, they didn't really play that well. They went to Florida Atlantic, only won by 4 in that one. So, you know, they're good, but they're not so good. I mean, I think FIU gave them a scare too, right? Their Florida trip was a little scary the whole time.
If you want to compare Conference USA basketball and Conference USA football, I don't even think they're on the same planet, really. I think that basketball is way ahead of the football.
Yeah.
I think if you look at where we were last year, you know, there's 32 conferences in NCAA basketball, Division I. Last year, Conference USA was running around probably the 21st best conference. And this year, you look at us, we're top 15, 13, 12, somewhere in there. So that's a major improvement in the step of competition. It's those lower teams like North Texas taking a jump up. But again, Old Dominion, Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee, UAB, Marshall's played well early on. So there's a lot of good basketball teams. There's really good basketball teams, I think, between Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee. And then I think after that, you get a slew of good teams that can beat anybody on any night.
All right, so let's take a look at our future schedule. Or do you want to talk a little bit more about the Charlotte game? I mean, what did we learn from those two games other than, hey, protect the ball, make your free throws?
I think one of the biggest takeaways from those two games and the conference, the early four games as a whole, has been we were expecting more from A.J. Lawson. I think that's been the biggest mystery riddle to solve with this team, because he's, you know, he's talented. We know he can't really shoot the ball well, but he can shoot it better than he is, because it doesn't look like his shot is broken, you know. So is it a confidence issue? I think right now it is a confidence issue with him. You can tell the frustration is there when he misses free throws, when he misses finishing around the rim. But he's a guy that's got to score in double figures for us. He's got to find a way, you know, he gets to the free throw line. They're free. They're free shots. You got to knock him down. But, you know, and this is the fan coming out of me, and I'm not a coach, and I'm not, you know, some superstar that knows everything like about college basketball. But, you know, if it was me, if I was Coach McCaslin, I would try and get him in some isolations, because I think he's good at taking whoever he's got early in the game. Get him in some isolations. And get him some looks on the low post, you know, post him up. You look at the team that we have. Do we really have a guy that we can throw the ball to in the post?
No.
We don't throw it to Shane. We don't throw it to Simmons. You know, we throw it to him and he finishes around the rim, but it's not back to the basket, throw it to him and get us a bucket. Really, the only guy that we have right now is Tope. And he's played well the last two games. But
aside from that no-look baseball pass.
Just the fan in me, I'd like to see a couple plays early in the game. Run a little, you know, set where you run a little cross screen and get him a post look, because then he's already around the basket and we know that he can finish down there. I think that would help him. If he's the guy that we try to get going first it may help the offense. Because as of right now, our offensive efficiency in the first four games just hadn't been there.
Yeah, I think, I wonder, you know, there's only so much time that you have as a coach and you're trying to get everybody better. And I think that, I agree, he, you know, we could stand to run some sets for him. But also, I think there's just so much for McGaslin to consider at a point in time, like whatever the defense is doing, right, whatever they're showing. But then also, you know, he wants to make sure that he gets Smart involved, gets him a couple early looks, get Duffy a couple early looks, make sure Tamara is touching the ball. And they can get their stuff in the normal offensive flow and, you know, one or two sets. You know, we run like a I don't think we run any, like, floppy action, but we run a couple sets for Smart to get him open for three. So I think we're just kind of, you know, like, getting running anything for Lawson specifically is expensive, you know, and I don't know the return so high. That's like the devil's advocate part. I bet you, you know, McGaslin has, you know, he's thought about it and they're considering it and they want to do something like that. They do get him the ball sometimes, and he has been good in certain situations, as you said, in isolation, right? In the UTSA game, he got a couple clutch buckets because he kind of went one-on-one. He did the same against Charlotte, or at least forced the issue, trying to make something happen. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see his shot fall a little bit more, and I think that would loosen him up a little bit, where he'd play a little freer. Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Rudy Gay, but like an unpolished. Obviously, Rudy Gay, right, in the NBA, is a full-on developed scorer, and he knows all the tricks of the trade. But yeah, it's like, you know, Rudy Gay for a long time was like, well, he doesn't really take good shots. You know, he's good one-on-one, but he's not efficient with the ball. And, you know, it took him a long time now to this point in his career to kind of get something approaching that. Lawson is obviously a lot earlier on in his development as a basketball player. So, I mean, we're not going to see super efficiency from him. And I don't know that we're ever going to see that, you know, going forward in the conference.
Well, if you look at, you know, stats, right, and our most used player on the floor whenever he's out there is Roosevelt Smart. He's number one.
Yeah.
We've seen that. The second most used player when he's on the floor is AJ Lawson.
Yeah.
He's above Ryan Woolridge. He's above Tope, Shane, all those guys. So the two go-to guys, major contributors in our offense, are Lawson and Smart right now, the way that they're playing and taking shots. You know, he's got to find a way. He's shooting 22-23% from the three-point range.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think that he is comfortable in the offense. Like, the shots that he's taking, I don't think he's comfortable with any of them. Like, he's like, well, I need to score. I'm sure coach is like, we need you to score. But it doesn't seem like he's comfortable taking any of the shots that he's taking, except the ones he's going to the basket. And some of those are just a little wild to me.
Exactly. So that was my point.
Yeah.
If most of his offense is going to the basket, if we get him the ball at the post already, then he's at the basket.
Yeah.
And it becomes sometimes easier, I think, as a player to score then.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard to do that. And, I mean, you only get so much time at the college level, you know, and these guys are so much younger that you're working on, like, you know, different things all the time. All I'm saying is I can see how they don't necessarily change some things or work in some of those Lawson-only sets that would benefit him a little bit more. But I basically could see how they would like that. We'll see. Maybe we can get a hold of McGaslin and ask him, hey, why don't you run some more sets, son? All right. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Ryan Woolridge is fun. He had a couple tough shots. Pretty amazing shots. He had like a little breakaway tomahawk dunk. That was pretty amazing. That Old Dominion game really felt like we were going to come back. It really felt like it was set up. As soon as like Trey Porter traveled, I was like, we're going to win this game, man. I just feel it. I just know we're going to get a bucket. And then and then he traveled.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, ticky-tack call. But if you're the ref, I don't know. The officiating in the last two games, and then as Conference USA as a whole, every game that I've watched with North Texas, it just hasn't been there. I know it's tough to be a ref, and I know we always rag on the referees, but, I mean, there's just the details, you know, the things, you know, the one in the Charlotte game, you know, when they call the foul on Roosevelt Smart for tripping. He didn't even touch the guy. It was the Charlotte player that tripped him.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that just really irks you when you're a fan and you're watching the game. You just you want the referees to be consistent. And I'll give them a credit in one area. It seems like every screen that somebody sets is an illegal screen this year, all across the board. You watch any game, you're going to see like 50 illegal screens called.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna abstain from talking mess about the refs. But as my coach always told me, I mean, you know, the refs are part of the game. It's your job to adjust to the refs the way they're calling it. And he did travel. He did shuffle his feet. That's something that nobody calls anymore, but it is within the rules. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, you see, I don't want to compare it to the NBA, but in the NBA, everybody travels, especially on those from a stop. They always shuffle their feet. And I think everybody and this is what, like, the old school people that are, like, super purists are like, this is why you got to get that out the game, because they're making everybody else who's trying to emulate them travel, because nobody, believe it or not, is going to the high school game and watching Mr. Fundamental play. They're watching LeBron travel. They're watching Kyrie Irving do his thing. They're watching Kevin Durant shovel his feet. And they're trying those moves on YouTube every day. So, I mean, I think either you kind of adjust your calls to the NBA, to what is accepted now. I mean, because everybody kind of palms the ball a little bit. And, you know, do that, or you enforce it from the NBA level all the way down. But yeah, there's my spiel. All right, only one game this week, as you mentioned in the pre-show. We got Rice. What's your thought on Rice? How we match up in this one? Is it a kind of a get right game? It's on the road. Rice is 1-3, but they've given a couple teams a couple scares. How do we feel about Rice?
I feel okay because we played well on the road early on. Of course, how well can you say you have the 2 1-point wins? You haven't really blown anybody out. But Rice does not have a good offense. And I feel like our first shot defense is pretty good. I thought in the Old Dominion game, I thought we did a pretty good job keeping their guards out of the lane, making them take outside shots. Yeah, we struggled again on offensive rebounds, but I feel like our defense against Rice's offense, we should have a good night. We should be able, you know, to keep them low scoring. Our offense, we struggled, you know, early in conference play. You look at, you know, our efficiency, our offensive efficiency is, you know, 10 right now out of the 14 teams. So that's not real good versus our defensive efficiency, which is ranked 6. But that's about where we are as a team ranked. If I was power ranking them, I'd have us, you know, 7th overall. So getting back to the matchups, I think we can dominate on the glass against Rice. They gave up, like I said earlier, against Charlotte, 17 offensive rebounds. I felt like, you know, going into conference play, we were pretty good at offensive rebounds. So I think that, you know, our size, we should be able to take advantage of that. And then the other thing is Jordan Duffy into the game, playing at a high level, confidence got him rolling. If we add that extra scorer off the bench, I think that'll just help the offense even more. I'd even wonder if Coach McCaslin thinks about starting him over Lawson, or if he likes to have the points coming off the bench. Some coaches are different in that area. But I like the matchup. I think Rice is – they've been playing better. It's a game that we should win. But a road game in conference play, I mean, it can be a coin flip.
Yeah, Rice is not very tall. I think their tallest is like 6'9", which is about what, you know, we are there. So I feel good about that matchup. I didn't think that we did too well against Old Dominion's height. That's also partly why we struggled to get, you know, some shots off. I think Roosevelt Smart, he didn't shoot very well. He took some tough shots. I know late he was kind of just chucking some things up. But, I mean, you know, we were much better in transition, obviously, right? We got a couple steals and kind of, you know, made the game move, and we're much better when the game is moving than when they're set against us, and you know that's pretty common. So I think we'll have some, you know, it'll be a little bit easier to get our shots off against Rice, and that means probably we'll increase our efficiency a little bit. I'm hoping. Maybe get a couple rebounds, get a little putbacks, you know what I mean? So I feel good about that.
Yeah, I think their best player is he's a small forward, guard type player, is Connor Cashew. He's taken the majority of their shots. There's really nobody else in their offense who's taken a chunk amount of shots. I mean, when he's on the floor, he's taking 31% of their shots. That's a high margin, but he does a little bit of everything. You know, rebounds, assists. Again, he'll be matched up with – he could be matched up with Roosevelt Smart. So he's 6'5", so that could cause some issues. You know, the past couple games, they've been playing him at the two-guard position. So that may be a concern. And, you know, they're right now across the board, you know, 6'2", 6'5", 6'5", 6'6", 6'8". That's been their starting lineup. So they could have the length. That bothers us.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the things that we don't have in front of us. We have their height, but, you know, you can be tall but not long, right? You know, you could not have super long arms. I mean, that's pretty – that's a pretty common measurement everybody talks about, like length. You know, like Draymond Green is short, but he has really long arms, and that makes a whole lot of difference because nobody blocks a shot with your head, right? You block with your arms. So, I mean, that and, like, explosiveness. Are you like, 6'5", but and then you can't jump worth a lick? Then, I mean, you know, if I have a 6'4 guard, but he can jump out the gym, well, then that 6'5 guard is not really doing anything, you know? So, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, old listener, as you sit here and listen. That's the thing to look out for. I'm not super concerned about Rice's length. You know, all these guys, when you're at the college level, you've gone up against a 6'5 guy. If you're 6'5", 6'3", you know, it's all kind of familiar to you. But, I mean, real size of the stuff we saw against, like, Nebraska, even Georgetown, and athleticism to go with it, that's a little disconcerting. And, I mean, Trey Porter from Old Dominion was, he was too much for anybody to handle in there. That was, they were not ready for any of that.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell that when you're a big guy, a lot of it is about angles.
Yeah.
And when you're a freshman post guy in college, like Simmons was, you could tell he gets beat off of angles a couple times, and that gets him in foul trouble. And then you get Tope in there, and he has the upper body strength to kind of hang with Porter for a little bit. But then again, yeah, you know, he has the, you know, no look passes, and then he commits some silly fouls himself. So,
yeah.
And then Shane just, you know, it's one guy that you kind of don't want to have to put him up against like a Trey Porter, because you don't want to get him in foul trouble, because you need his outside shooting, you know. So, yeah, we really didn't have anybody to match up against them. You know, our front court matches up a lot better against Rice. We'll see about the back court.
Yeah, I mean, and going back to Old Dominion, like, nobody really, especially at this level, and especially in college basketball, just in general, nobody ever can match up with a center that can play like a center. And I think Porter was, I mean, he wasn't even doing anything special. He was just kind of, he was doing like some Dwight Howard type things where he just makes a move, they find a passing angle to him, and lob it into there to him, and he got it and put it in the basket. I mean, that's almost high school stuff. You're like, just throw it to the tall guy. They can't guard him. He'll just get a layup. But I mean, he had a nice little drop step here and there, and I think we had nothing for that kind of thing. And it's not really played anybody. Like, nobody really goes up against a guy with two post moves anymore. So,
but we've played guys. I mean, Lambert from Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
the 7-foot center from UTA. And we've played big guys, and we did well against those two guys, I thought. But we didn't block out and handle Porter like we should have.
Yeah. So we should handle Rice. Do we want to take any kind of look at next week? So this is the beginning of a 3-game road trip. You know, we go at Rice on Saturday. We get a little Thursday break, and then, you know, next week. We take on La Tech, and that'll be on Stadium, and then at Southern Miss. Tech, slow start, 0-3, and in conference play, and then Southern Miss. Not the greatest start. I don't know how good you think they are, but they didn't really play that well. They did beat UTSA. They beat them by like 10, I think it was. Let me take a look.
They beat them by 10. They scored 93 on them. They scored 85 and beat UTEP by 10 as well at home. They didn't play well against Marshall, and they didn't play well against Western Kentucky, but those are two high-powered scoring teams. So Southern Miss, yeah, they've been down the past couple of years, but they're 9-8. I mean, they have a win over Troy. Troy's, you know, a top 200 team. I guess you would compare them kind of to where we're at. Mm-hmm. Maybe probably a little bit better. But, I mean, if you're beating UTEP and you're beating UTSA at home, I mean, you can beat North Texas at home too. So I'm just – you got to be honest with it. It's going to be one of those type of close games probably again where, you know, making free throws, executing down the stretch will be crucial.
Yeah, and Louisiana Tech, they did beat – UTEP, I forgot to mention that. 97-88. That was a pretty high score in there. 97. Jeez.
I mean, there's teams in Conference USA that they can score, and it is a little bit concerning about our offensive efficiency. And when I'm talking offensive efficiency, I'm not talking, you know, how many points we score. That's great. You know, everybody wants to. I'm talking about points per possession, points per 100%. Possessions. Yeah, we're not great at it because we've watched them. We like to slow down the pace, but you can still have a high efficiency in offense and play at a slow pace. You know, for example, Old Dominion, they played kind of at a slow pace, and their offensive efficiency in the conference going into the game against us was number one. Now it's down to three. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that, like I said, I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. I don't know if we're going to all of a sudden become more efficient. I think, I don't know. I don't know that I like to slow down pace, but, you know, it is good. You do want some execution, I think, in the long term of the program. That's going to be good for the program. I don't know. What style of basketball do you like your favorite team to play, I guess? Because it's interesting that we're coming up, you know, like, talking about the rest of the league, and like Marshall is like a run and gun type of team. Didn't UAB play a little bit like that too? And you saw UTSA, they like to shoot threes all the time. A lot of people are like, oh, they score a lot, and you gotta, you know, per how do you say it? it's not weekly freshman of the week. It doesn't quite flow off the tongue, but you get my point. And a lot of that is because they like to chuck it.
My style was raised in like an Old Dominion type of style where you're very, you know, your defense, you're physical, and you get steals, turnovers, and that's your offense. That's you getting out on the fast break. That's how I was, you know, bred to play basketball. Now, the style that I like is obviously the open floor shooting, you know, just threes, just chuck it up there, running the fast break, because that's, you know, that's fun to watch if you're a fan. But I don't have a problem with what North Texas is doing, because early in the year, what was one of the biggest issues that we had? It was turnovers.
Yeah.
We were turning the ball over way too at a high clip. So what is slowing the offense down do? Well, it helps with the turnovers. It helps you execute, you know, make sure that we're not being wild. You know, Ryan, as the point guard last year, it seems like he got out of control a little bit too much.
Yeah.
This year, he's playing more under control because of the tempo is there to help slow him down, make better decisions. That doesn't mean that we don't like to get out and run. We've seen it in conference play the last couple of games. If there's an opportunity to run, we're going to do it. You know, if we're struggling on offense, or if we're facing a team that's playing a lot of zone defense on us, then we're going to try and run. We're trying to push the pace a little bit. Or if we're playing a team like Old Dominion, or when we were playing San Diego, they were a team that liked to slow it down, we push the pace. I think it's just going to be a game by game take it. But for me, I've got no problem with it, because we've slowed down on our turnovers. It keeps us in games. You know, we're never too far out of a game because of our offense, and it helps build this team together. If you're being forced to execute and run through plays and offense, then it's almost like you're getting practice out there. And you're learning how to play with one another. everybody can get out there and run, you know, the three-man weave and the fast break type of stuff. But how well do you know your teammate? You know, can you think like him? Is he going to cut here? Is he going to go this direction on the screen? Those type of things, that makes an offense really good, really kick in March.
You know, yeah, I think, you know, that unless you have, like, transcendent talent, and, I mean, you look at some of these teams that have everybody points to the Warriors, like, well, look at them, they run and chuck it. Like, yeah, we also have the greatest three-point shooter ever. Also right next to him, the second greatest three-point shooter ever. And, I mean, you know, it's kind of the same way that you look at, like, you know, and I know I'm talking NBA here, but, you know, you look at, like a Michael Jordan. A lot of people are trying to mold their offenses. Like, we'll just get a guy, we'll throw him the ball, and, you know, kind of see what happens. Like, well, that works great if you have the greatest basketball player in the league and maybe of all time, right? You know, you got to find what works best for your team. And even if you believe in running and running up and down and shooting the ball, but if you don't got shooters, it doesn't really matter what you want.
Right.
You know,
and,
you're gonna miss.
We don't really have those shooters. Like, you know, you talk about Marshall. They've got guys that can put the ball in the bucket at a high clip. I mean, those guys, they fill it up. We got Smart, and hopefully we get Jordan Duffy going, because I think there's two legit guys that can score from the outside and can get to the basket. So, yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see how we continue to play out. I believe they're going to continue to stay with the slow pace.
Yeah, and like I said, just to continue my point, I think that's fine. And I actually prefer, I mean, you always want easy buckets, right? Like, the ideal basket is your, you know, Ryan Woolridge running by himself, getting a dunk, right, on a fast break. That's, you know, if he took 50 shots in the game and, you know, he's going to make 50 of those, right? We'll even just say, you know, maybe he gets tired one time from, you know, dunking the ball 50 times, he misses one. But that's the ideal offense, right? That's the ideal basketball, is somebody just dunking the ball. But if you can't get that, you know, I think the best teams, the best defensive teams, are going to make you look for your second or third option. And, you know, like you said, it's good practice running your set. It's good to have to run your offense and try to break down another team, because when you get to, like, advanced, deeper levels, you know, better teams, you're going to have to run something. You can't. They're going to take away your first, second option, and you're going to have to go a little bit deeper. And so I think every basketball team needs to be able to execute. And then, again, you go back to the Warriors. The underrated thing about them is that they execute their offense, right? It's not just Steph Curry shooting threes from 50 feet away. It's also them running and cutting and great basketball, right? And so
nobody cares about the Warriors. So.
Hey, we have to talk to all the fans, you know what I mean?
No, we don't have to talk about the Warriors.
You get my point, ladies and gentlemen. There's more to it, and I do like that we're going through our sets, and you can see that it's not, all right, throw the ball to our best players, let them create. We're trying to get something to happen. The game tying three? Yeah. The one Duffy hit. We tried to run a little two-man game with, I think it was Simmons and Woolridge out in the corner on the wing. And everybody knows, they went under the screen because they know that Ryan Woolridge is not the greatest shooter. So they got a little screen. He got a little run and start, and then he one-handed passed it to Duffy, who was in the corner, and flashed to the vacated space. Both Simmons and Woolridge were, like, going towards the basket. Simmons had set the screen and was rolling. Woolridge, you know, attacked the defender and then made the pass. That was a great play. That's how you get Duffy open, you know, instead of throwing him the ball and saying, well, see if you can create and shoot the ball. That's how he got a nice rhythm, catch and shoot three, tied the game. That was good basketball. I like that. And I think, you know, to your point about running through your sets, getting everything going, that's how you execute those plays there. I think that was a good spot, you know, that's going to pay some dividends down the stretch, maybe even in the conference tournament. you know, which I think is not our ultimate goal, but one of the major goals for this program is to compete in a conference tournament. And, you know, next year, right? That pays off next year or something like that.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
When you get into March, you never know. When the, you know, everybody says they should expand the field of, well, not everybody, but there are advocates out there that say expand the field, you know, put more people in this tournament. Conference tournaments, that's the beginning part of the tournament.
Yes.
If you win your league, then you're in. And yeah. There's plenty of times where you see, you know, the lower seeds in these tournaments make a run and, you know, shock the world. And, you know, we end up with, a team that's 19 and 15 in the NCAA tournament when they had, you know, a team in their league that was like, you know, 28 and 2 or something.
Oh, wasn't it like Middle Tennessee past couple years, or in the last 3 or 4 years they got left out? I think
there was one year where they got left out. It was one of their earlier years. Not recently. They've been playing pretty good. I want to say.
Yeah, I can't remember what year that was.
Oh, it was, golly, they won like 30 games or something, and then they got left out.
Yeah. I saw you tweeting.
Like, I want to say it was like one of the beginning years of
Conference USA. Is that 2013 or something like that, maybe?
No, it was one of the early years when Benford was around, like 2012 or something. I believe they lost in the Sun Belt tournament to Arkansas State, and they ended up going to the NIT or something. They won 27 games that year.
You're going to make me Google it. Speaking of other teams, what do you see? How many bids we getting this year? You think we're going to get it to? Or you think it's going to be the one bid league?
It's tough to steal another bid away from the, you know, the big conferences, the majors.
But yeah, I saw you tweeting about it, man. You're like, is this going to be a?
If there's ever a year, this would be the year. The thing that concerns me is the attrition and the gauntlet that you have to go through. Because, okay, Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, those are obviously the two teams that if we're going to get two bids, probably is going to come from them too. Maybe even Old Dominion. Let's throw them in there. But I'm not sure after watching them play us that they're elite enough to run the gauntlet. So Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, can they survive, you know, right now? Each one of those teams are 11-5 for Western Kentucky. They've got some pretty good wins. Middle Tennessee is 11-4, and they've got brand name. So can they survive, you know, having to play against Old Dominion, UAB, Marshall, UTSA, North Texas, Southern Miss, and Louisiana Tech? Those teams can take a win from you any night, home, away. They're good enough to beat you, get hot. And then how does that hurt their bid, you know, to get into the tournament? So those two teams would really have to dominate, I think, for it to be a two-bid league. I mean, they'd almost have to have, you know, maybe two losses, maybe even just one loss apiece to have a shot to get in as a two-bid league. But it's possible. They're both really good.
In Ken Pom's ratings, I think he has Western Kentucky at 59, Middle Tennessee at 63, and Old Dominion at 66.
Yeah, and Andy Katz this week, he had in his top 68, he had both Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky in the tournament.
Hey, I wonder if they're just like little lip service, little fan service there, right? Like, hey, here's
the bubble. I mean, you know, it's always the bubble. When you get down to that time of year, the bubble teams, and then you have these pretty good mid-major programs like Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee that they could probably beat these, you know, major teams that are, you know, that are almost 500 that get in, you know, get in on brand name or their coach or, you know, something like that. But it's on the committee, you know, and what do they value? But, I mean, you can't argue against Western Kentucky. You know, SMU struggled here lately, but they went out, they beat Purdue, they beat SMU. They lost by one to Wisconsin. They lost by they lost by nine to Villanova, who's number one in KenPom. So, I mean, that's a tough non-conference schedule for you. And it helps that the rest of Conference USA is a good league. It yeah. helps bolster theirs. Then you look at Middle Tennessee's, you know, they go out, they lost to Belmont early, but beating Vanderbilt, beating Mississippi, those help. They lost the close games against Miami, lost by three, lost by five to USC, and then lost by the six to Belmont. But they beat Murray State early too, so those are all top 100 teams on their schedule. So they've played, they both, it's not like they're playing cream puff schedules. They've lost to legit teams, both those. So, like I said, if they end up Conference USA at the end of the regular season with two or one loss, then they'll be right there on the bubble, I believe.
Yeah, and if you're wondering, you're like, man, you guys are talking a lot about these other teams. Like, what does that matter for North? Well, I mean, we get a little of that conference tournament money. You know, the more teams that you have, the bigger cut of the pie the league gets. I mean, so, you know, it kind of sucks. You know, you see one of them teams in there, you don't want to root for Middle Tennessee, but the deeper they go in, you know, the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, we both, I mean, we know we hate those teams. Like, the Red Pimple and their fans, we don't like them. And, you know, Middle Tennessee, I mean, obviously we have a history and we don't like them either.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, like I said, if it brings some shine to Conference USA and to little old North Texas. And so, I mean, we want good things to happen in Conference USA. And that's, you know, that's what we do, what we do. Yeah, like I said, we extended it out. Talk a little bit about Louisiana Tech and Southern Miss. We'll talk more about them next week. We'll learn a little bit more about them after this weekend's games. Is there any game in particular that stands out to you this week? What do we got on the calendar?
Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee. We'll see where, if Louisiana Tech, like you said, they struggled early in conference play.
Yeah, one and three right now.
But they've, you know, I tweeted out, their schedule was so front-loaded. They've played six of the top seven teams in their first seven games. I mean, they've played what they will have played in their first seven games, North Texas, Western Kentucky, UAB, Old Dominion, I believe. Let me go back and look it up. But they've played their first seven games in conference. So they lose by one to Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They go on the road, lose to Marshall by 13. Then they play UTSA. Then they play UTEP. Then they get Middle Tennessee. Then they get UAB. Then they get North Texas. That is a tough, tough first seven games of conference play.
Yeah, I mean, all those teams you listed, like, everything you said, right? Conference USA is playing well. It's everybody's kind of, I don't know, like I said, there's a lot of bunching. And so you don't know any of those teams could beat any of the other teams. So you don't really know too much. And on any given night, anybody, any of these teams can win something. I don't know. Of the top couple teams, well, I don't know. Top four teams are Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee. We'll throw Old Dominion in there. And, I mean, who's the fourth, do you think?
Right now, I'd have to say UAB. And until Louisiana Tech shows that they can turn it back around, then you'd have to, I'd say UAB.
So do you think, of the top four teams, which of them is most likely to stumble?
Maybe this UAB weekend?
I mean, just, you know, in the next couple weeks. I'm just wondering how, like, you know, look at the standings right now. You got ODU number one, right, 3-0 in conference, 12-3 overall. Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky. Marshall's next. Marshall got waxed at home, so we can go ahead and say that.
I wouldn't be surprised if Old Dominion loses two out of their next three. I think Marshall could beat them. Western Kentucky could beat them.
Yeah, we'll see. So this week's late, Charlotte, home against Marshall. Marshall Smartin, right? Southern Miss goes to Birmingham, takes on UAB. Western Kentucky goes to Norfolk. Going to play there. That's going to be a big game. We're going to see some things there. Yeah, that's a Thursday game. FIU in San Antonio at UTSA. That's a Thursday night game. And then these other two Thursday games. FAU UTEP. That's a tough one. Florida Atlantic gets to travel all the way to El Paso. And then, you know, Tech and Middle Tennessee. Saturday games. FAU traveling all the way to UTSA. I guess, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to just hang out in El Paso, Texas. San Antonio? Like, where do they stay? They're going to just, I mean, what are they going to do? They're not going to fly all the way home, are they?
No.
That would be awful. Yeah. What are they, I wonder where they're staying. Maybe in San Antonio. They play UTEP, drive to San Antonio that night.
Honestly, I don't really care where they're staying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, this is one of those problems with, like, the logistics of this league. It's not like, you know, like, we can leave day of, right, come down to Bryce, you know, from Denton. But what do you do when you got to go to Florida? Like, what do you just hang out?
Yeah, so, you know, how does it feel like if you're the Florida teams making the Texas trip? We all know, like, for the Texas teams making the Florida trip, you can go out to the beach and hang out, and it's cool, but the Florida teams traveling to Texas, they're like, what is this? What?
Yeah, to El Paso, they're like, what the hell? That's why they're doing it, El Paso, and then they come to San Antonio and they get the hell out. So then what do we got? Then obviously we're going down to Houston, Tech and UAB, Southern Miss, Middle Tennessee, and then Western Kentucky and Charlotte. Western Kentucky should win that easily. Marshall, Old Dominion, that's a big one. Old Dominion has a couple good games at home this week.
Mm-hmm.
A couple good ones. And then FIU and UTEP. Nobody cares about that one either, I don't think. FIU has the worst court. I posted that on the ConferenceUSAReport.com. They have the worst court. Like, half of it is, like, it's supposed to look like a beach. So half of it is water, or at least a corner of it. Like, one side of it is water, and the other side is sand. It looks like grass coming in there. Like, I get they're trying to do this big graphic thing that lots of teams have done, but it is so distracting to look at. It looks like they're playing on a thin court, and it looks awful. Please change that, FIU. If this podcast is any clout, please let's change that. I think that's all for the basketball talk right now. I want to get your thoughts on last night's championship game. Were you rooting for Georgia or something? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, my wife, she has a cousin, and he's from Alabama. And, man, if you spend any time around Alabama fans, you know. I mean, you know. You guys out there, you few, five, six people, however many of you are listening, you know Alabama fans, they just take it to the next level. And you wish that they just get beat. And then they find a way. You're like, Nick Saban, really? What contract did you make? What did you sign with the devil or something? Because that dude, everybody, you know, called like, oh, the ballsiest move. No, that wasn't a ballsy move. His quarterback sucks, so he changed him. Jalen Hurts wasn't doing anything, so he goes to the freshman. I mean, we've heard, everybody heard, this guy's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, Trent Dilfer said it. Oh, my God. If Trent Dilfer says that this guy is the best quarterback, then by God, he's going to win 5 national championships. Somehow he's going to get that extra year.
I think, at the very least, I saw Smart Football tweet that somebody told him that they were given what's his name? I can't even say his name, but that guy, Tua T, he was getting reps with the first team over the week, I think during the week, or maybe even the break. Like, they thought that he could do some of this. He was good. I mean, he obviously had running talent. I mean, he had that third down scramble that was pretty amazing. He can throw the ball. I mean, Jalen Hurts couldn't throw the ball down the field. You can't take anything away from this Tua kid. 3 touchdowns, 166 yards in the second half, 26 points. I mean, he did take a bad sack, but so did Fromm. That was an awful sack. He got bailed out. They really shouldn't have even gone overtime because that kicker has to make that kick, man. That was a bad miss.
Yeah, and the touchdown, the third touchdown that tied it up, everybody credited the quarterback.
Yeah, he was throwing an interception. That ball was going to be intercepted. That was a receiver making a play.
He was throwing it to the running back who was running in the back of the end zone, and, you know, Cam Ridley comes out of nowhere, you know. There we go. Yeah. There's the contract sign with the devil. He just pops out. There's Cam Ridley making a touchdown grab, and you're like, is this really happening? Is this kid, can nobody beat this team?
Georgia came real close to doing it, and they probably should have won. They just missed. They just missed a couple of big plays there in the second half. They didn't do anything. And I think some of that was their own doing.
It's frustrating to watch them win again and then to have all these freshmen, you know, their leading rusher, their leading passer, and their leading wide receiver. They're all freshmen. So.
And the left tackle out there, right?
The left tackle too. So all that, but I will say, I saw it earlier that Bruce Arians, the coach from the Cardinals, he's no fool. He's a well-respected guy. He believes that Nick Saban would be willing to listen to the Giants because that's Nick's like dream job is the Giants.
Really? Did he grow up like a Giants fan or something? Like, wasn't he born in West Virginia? Like, what? I mean, I guess
it don't matter. I mean, you know, he coached with the Browns. That's all I care about.
I thought Bill Belichick was going to the Giants.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Everybody's already made this joke, but it's pretty hilarious that both teams, both Georgia teams, because you know, if you're a Georgia fan, you are also an Atlanta Falcons fan, and I mean, was this all in basically 1 year, within a year's time? Your teams did the same thing to you, you know, had a lead against a dynasty and blow it. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Move on to next year.
I mean, I was rooting for Georgia. I don't really like Alabama, Nick Saban, that kind of thing. But I mean, you know, you gotta respect. That was they dialed it up. I think what's funny is they're watching everybody learn a little football. They're like, that play was called Seattle? Like, wow, let me write that down. That's a pretty clever name. I'm like, that's a pretty common name for that play. You open up.
Come on, watch Madden.
Yeah, that's the and all the West Coast offenses is called Seattle, and I think just four verts or six in air raid terminology, or all streaks, all go. Lots of teams. It's just four verticals. In our terminology, I think it's six. Right, North Texas. Good stuff. Good stuff. Good ending to the college football season. Do you think and do you want any playoff changes?
I don't know. I mean, it would have been nice to see Central Florida get a shot, possibly. I mean, you know, they played well. They played Auburn well. We saw Auburn beat Georgia, beat Alabama both this year at one time. So, It would have been fun to see them get a mix in the playoff, but I don't know. The four teams, it works fine for me. I think the best team the past couple of years has won the championship, and isn't that what the playoff is all about, is whoever the best team is? Like, you know, the year that Ohio State won, they were clearly the best team. They got in, but they deserved they would have beaten anybody in the country, I think, when they were playing at their top. And then the Alabamas and the Clemsons, and then Alabama again.
I mean, that's a big question, right? Like, that's the season that the reason you contest a football season, right, is to determine who's the best, right? We got all our players, we trained them up in the offseason, so we're going to play a slate of games, and then you determine who's the best team of all the teams that contested a slate of games. The problem is that football is such a violent sport that you can't play the requisite amount of games to accurately determine a championship team, right? In the NBA, in baseball, over 162, or even in hockey, over 82 games, you really know who's the best team, and the playoffs are probably just a little extra, right? I mean, but even then, you play a 7-game series, you know who's the best team, right? You don't get that in football, and you're never going to get that in football, right? Like, part of the fun of the game is that there's enough, you know, luck involved that you can get a little upset any given Sunday, any given Saturday, any given Friday, that kind of deal. So, you're not always going to get, you know, the perfect champion, and there's too many teams, too many college football teams to really know. But I think you gotta expand the playoff a little bit. And, you know, I would be fine with leaving Alabama out because they didn't win their league. You know, like you were just saying about the NCAA tournament, that the conference tournament served as a de facto early round kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, play an even number. You know, win your division. You win your division. You play in a conference championship game. You win that, you're in the playoff, right? Power five teams. If you win your league, you're in the playoff, guaranteed. Then nobody has any complaints, right? Alabama couldn't complain because they were like, you know what? We didn't win our division, so we didn't win the SEC, so we don't go to the playoff. Like, I mean, that's it. Like, yeah, they would have been a better team, but these are the rules, right? And, you know, G5 teams, highest-ranked G5 team this year would have been, like, UCF. Previous years, you got your, what, Boise State, TCU in a different era. There's always a team, and you throw them a bone, basically. And then, you know, a couple at-large, maybe. You're going to have to, in order to get this work, a couple at-large, you know, Power 5 teams, probably, just at-large teams. It's always going to be a Power 5 team, but it would be great if you got a G5 team. And I think that's how you solve it. I don't think anybody could credibly claim anything. They'll be like, oh, the SEC's too hard. You just don't understand. Well, I mean, like, well, win your league, man. You win your league, you get in. You know, that's it. Maybe you rank them higher, right? If you win the SEC and they get a number one seed and they play the G5 league to open it up. Whatever you do. I think that's a fair way to solve it. Because you don't have any complaining, right? Maybe the at-large teams complain, but, you know, whatever. That's fine.
I think your argument is crap.
I think it makes too much sense what it is. I mean, you know, like, the Pac, so then you got the Pac-12, who's clearly lesser than, but they get in, they can't complain about anything, right? You win your league, you're in. That's it. That's all you do. You still have some incentive to play a good schedule because you have a possibility to get an at-large bid. You still have an incentive to win your league, so it doesn't devalue your league. You know, you win your league, you're in. You're in the playoffs. That's how I see it. Y'all can let us know what you think. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left on this podcast. Nobody ever listens this deep unless you're dedicated.
I mean, I stopped listening to you talk like 5 minutes ago, so...
Anyway, so anything else you want to get off, fire off? You got some hot sports opinions you want to fire off in the depths of a podcast?
No, I think I've pissed off enough people today, so.
I mean, you're pretty tame today, Greg. I mean, usually you didn't even get like that red cheek buildup, you know, when you're really getting into it. Yeah, you look calm.
No, I think football makes me too negative. Basketball I'm more excited about, so I don't get as negative, and I think that's a good thing.
I mean, that's always a good thing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Mean Green Nation podcast. You can get at us, podcast@meangreennation.com. Send us an email if you want to, you know, have a conversation. Let us know. Greg is, what is it, MG_BBallReport, and you can get at me, Mean Green Nation. You can tweet at me, whatever you want to say to Greg. I'll just retweet it and he'll see it. And we'll figure it out. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen, and Gum and Green.